Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety, the podcast from Lighthouse Hockey. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me this evening via Skype is my friend Mike Leboff. And Mike, like when we spoke after the first few games of the Islanders-Penguins series, we did not expect the Islanders to be up 3-0. I think that neither of us thought we would be talking about the Islanders being down 2-0 to the Hurricanes, but that's exactly where they are right now.
Yeah, it sucks. There's no time for silver linings at this point, but I think the fact that they played well enough to win both games, they definitely deserve to win today, being game two, and makes it hurt a little bit more, for sure.
Yeah, that seems to be the prevailing thought from today's game, which is that the Islanders deserved to win, if not at least get the game to overtime. They had the better of the expected goals, the better of shots, the better of high danger chances, the better of basically everything except for the pipes, the crossbars, and general luck of the game. One Hurricanes player in Arthur Staples' game story called it a horseshoe up the ass type of game, which is a phrase I've heard before. I've heard of a horseshoe being up your ass as a, you know, meaning you have had a lot of luck. And when the other team says they were lucky to win that game, you know you played pretty well. But like you said, you know, playing pretty well and losing in a game is okay if it's, you know, February and you're 3 or 4 points ahead of the team behind you, or it's November and the season is just kind of getting started. When you're already down 1-0 in a playoff series and then you get a game where you were outplaying your opponent and still lost, that is less of a good feeling. It's a pretty shitty feeling, as we're all experiencing right now. So you were actually at both games. So I'm interested to hear kind of what your thoughts were on the sort of, you know, not only just the game, but like the atmosphere of both games, because I thought the first game was fine. I didn't watch today's game, unfortunately, but I was seeing Avengers Endgame, which was very good. You should go see it if you haven't already. But I'm just kind of interested because I thought game one was fine, like in terms of crowd noise and atmosphere and all that stuff. It seemed fine, at least on the TV.
Yeah, the atmosphere Friday was really strange, because I think the pregame hype was great, right? I took a subway from work, and as soon as you got off the train, like, I was meeting a couple people at the bar, and it's so funny during playoff runs how you end up like developing like a playoff family almost. Like, I've got friends from high school and even beyond that I know that they're just huge Islander fans, and maybe I don't see them quite often, you know, in day to day life, but during the playoff runs that they've had, like, these are the people like I talk to probably more than anybody, just because they know exactly like the feelings that we're going through. Right. So I can't really talk to, you know, my best friend who's not an Islander fan, because he doesn't understand just how low it feels right now or how high it felt on when they beat the Penguins. But it is funny, like, just this crew of people you kind of amalgamate in a playoff run. And so I met all these people up at a bar. I dropped my bag off, and the pregame atmosphere was great. It felt like, all right, like, this isn't tailgating in the parking lot, but it's nice. We're all talking about the game and how we're nervous and whatever. And then you got in there, and the building is just, it's so manufactured, the atmosphere, that like I think people had built themselves up so to be so excited before the game that when they actually stepped into Barclays Center sure, we all knew it wasn't going to be the Coliseum, but when you actually did, and like the first big hit didn't ring like a standing ovation like it would have in Nassau, people, I think, started to get discouraged, and I don't really blame people. Like, if some fans like in my section today were like yelling at each other for like not being loud enough, and some guy was, you know, it was just like we were almost too far away from each other. There weren't any chance that like sustained over like a minute or two like they do in big games at the Coliseum. And that's just because the building is just terribly designed for a hockey game, and everything's manufactured. So like, sure, today, for example, when the Islanders killed off that 5-on-3, like, it got really loud in there for 30 seconds. And then all of a sudden you got the DJ playing, you know, really loud music and just drowning out the crowd noise. And the same thing goes with like every commercial, every whistle, there's a one of those canned movie, you know, clips of, you know, Herb Brooks giving his miracle speech, or Braveheart, one of the 1800 speeches in Braveheart. There was a Mystery Alaska thing. It's just like it's so manufactured that like it takes it. The fans should be the ones directing like that kind of show. And at Barclays Center, they just don't do it. And it's hypocritical to complain about it. Cause like I was saying, oh, this whole run, like if once we get to the second round, I don't care where they play, but it is, they just have not done a good job. It really, like, honestly, if you walked in there, if you took somebody from Luxembourg and said, all right, you're going to go to this playoff game, you don't know who's going to be playing until you step foot inside the building, and you have two guesses. It's either going to be the Brooklyn Nets or the New York Islanders. That person would be like, I would bet my life it's the Brooklyn Nets. there's very little Islanderization of it. Yeah. And it's just like so par for the course. Like these people, I think it was Brett Sergalis and I think Staples said something too on Friday. Like when you came up from the subway from Brooklyn for like the beat reporters getting there for like the morning skates or whatever, it's like you would have no idea that there was a huge playoff game happening that night.
They were putting up signage that morning and that afternoon. And it's like,
there's no excuse for that.
Yeah. And I mean, on one hand, it's sort of like, you know, do we really need to know this? But at the other hand, it's like, that's really kind of stupid. Like, did they not think anybody would notice? And it's like throwing somebody a birthday party and like, but, you know, just not putting anything up until, you know, it's a few hours before. And then before you know it, everybody's eating, you know, Ritz crackers off of a paper plate. It's like, that's not really a party. It's like, yeah, you threw a party, but this isn't really a party. And you know, I think continuing with that food theme, it's a little bit like, you know, your favorite local mom and pop restaurant that's been in business for 40 years, and maybe it's probably a diner, and you know they've been servicing the community forever and people like it, and you know maybe it's not the best food in the world, but it's cheap and it's good and it's always there when you need it, versus, you know, TGI Fridays, where you know TGI Fridays is fine. If I ate at Chili's today, it's exactly like TGI Fridays. It's fine, but it's very impersonal. It, you know, the more they try and make it personal, the less personal it feels, you know, and it's like all this manufactured junk, you know, nostalgia on the walls. It's like, dude, I just came here for a hamburger. It's really not that big a deal, it's, you know, and they charge you twice as much as the local place does. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I thought it felt okay, but, you know, I know you're afraid of sounding hypocritical, but at the same time, like, this is the first time we've ever done it both ways. You know, it's the last time the Islanders were in the playoffs at Barclays Center, we didn't have the games at Nassau to compare it to. And quite frankly, those games were phenomenal. They were really, really good. And you know, if anything, it feels hypocritical to say that after all these years of being like, they're never going to play there again. Well, here they are. And now we kind of wish they were playing there again.
Yeah. There's you know, we're being hypocritical. But then, like, there's just so many things you think back to the day they announced it. Like, the how NHL it is that the non-major league facility is the one where with ice. I mean, the ice has been just
it's been pretty bad, yeah.
Trash. It's the Coliseum ice against the Penguins wasn't good. I distinctly remember Casey Cizikas just completely, you know, falling flat on his face. I think it was game one.
Yeah, that
and the Penguins scored. Yeah, the Penguins scored. So like, it's not like the ice at the Coliseum was great, but to have it be worse than that is really sad.
Somebody said, I feel like it was Cal Clutterbuck who said, the ice everywhere is bad. Like, if you get good ice, that's rare, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm sure the ice in Dallas and in San Jose is going to be pretty bad, too.
I was thinking, I was like, today I was trying so hard not to think about that. And then I can't remember who it was. Someone on the Hurricanes, like, fell right in the – it seemed to be the where the Islanders shot twice, that end, the left faceoff. So the goalie's right. Shooter's left face-off circle was really bad. Someone fell, and I was just like, I thought about that exactly. Like, you know, everywhere has bad ice, but I've been watching a lot of hockey the past, you know, month, and I haven't seen more than two people in a game, if that's being generous, lose an edge. I think it's like,
it's never a conversation piece, you know what I'm saying? Like, with an Islanders game,
right.
You know, it never comes up in conversation. Like, if the ice is bad, maybe it's a player who's like, yeah, it wasn't that great. But meanwhile, with the Islanders, like, they're talking about it during the game. And it comes up in game stories that the ice was bad. And the players are like, oh, it was bad. So it becomes a thing, basically.
Yeah. It's just – and there's just so many – I think they had the Barclays Center had a really good chance to kind of just get back in the Islander fans' good graces by just putting in just a half-ass effort would have been fine, because it's more than what they're doing. And I like even like today I got on a train at 1:51. It was supposed to land at 2:28 or 2:29 at Barclays, and we just stopped outside Jamaica for, you know, a good 20 minutes, and that was frustrating in itself. But the most frustrating part was that they just never say anything on the Long Island Railroad. And it's just like those, the Barclays Center and the Long Island Railroad are like the perfect, they're perfect for each other, because neither one of them will ever be held to task. There's no reason for them to go the extra mile for the fans, because you got no other choice. Like you're either gonna, you don't want to take the Long Island Railroad to the city for work every day. Fine. Like you're never going to get, you're not going to, good luck driving to your job. Or, and then Barclays Center is like, all right, you don't want to come to the Barclays Center for these games? Like, enjoy the Kansas City Islanders. So it's just like, it sucks. And the situation they're in, I was really hoping it – I mean, I'm not – first of all, I'm not blaming the Barclays Center for either one of these losses. Do I think that, like, there's definitely – if it's a one – I think Barry Trotz himself said, if there's a 1% edge among each – or increase in each player just because of the Coliseum, like that's a really big deal. So losing that, maybe that's what it is. It's, a small sliver of a percentage towards a win that per player that goes down. But it was a D minus, I would say, for both games, like combined.
It is funny that you equate Barclays with the Metro, the MTA, because they both have New Yorkers over a barrel, basically. It's either use us or don't. But they always want, like, pats on the back for what they do, which is like, yeah, this could be a lot better, it's good. No, it really isn't. But, I agree with you. I don't think nobody's blaming the building for what's happened with the Islanders and why they're down 2-0. And let's just talk about that real quick. Like I said, over the course of these last two games, they've played pretty well. You could make the case that game one was the weaker game. They did have 10 days off, and the rust was kind of evident in the first few minutes, but after that, they were pretty good. And I mean, you could basically say that they probably had the better of play, although it was close. I mean, the Hurricanes had a lot of chances too, but shots were even at 31 apiece. Both teams went 0-for-4 on the power play, which is either good or bad, depending on how you look at it. The difference was Peter Mrazek, who, we talked about Robin Leonard sort of being the Islanders' X factor. Well, here comes Peter Mrazek, and he matches Leonard literally save for save. It was 0-0 going into overtime. I mean, how many playoff games could we say that for? Certainly not too many Islanders games over the last couple of years. But, they're in overtime, and the Islanders, frankly, had the run of play for the most part early in overtime. But Cal Clutterbuck is coming in, breaking into the zone. He's going to figure prominently in both of these games, unfortunately. Coming into the zone, he sort of forces a bad pass, which was meant for Anthony Beauvillier, but Beauvillier had peeled off. Arthur Staples' article in The Athletic after game one has a really, really good breakdown of just how many things went wrong on this one play. And so that pass was bad, gets picked off, goes the other way. A bunch of guys are on that shouldn't be on. A bunch of guys have been on for far too long. There's a bunch of breakdowns. The Hurricanes kind of hold the puck in the Islander zone for a while. And then a really nifty pass from Nino Niederreiter banks off the end boards, and it ends up right on the stick of Jordan Staal, who was almost like perpendicular to the net, and he flings it in, and it actually bounces off Robin Leonard's skate and in. And just like that, the Hurricanes are up 1-0, and you're just like, ah. And Leonard called it a shitty bounce, and it was kind of a cool bounce, but for him, it was kind of a shitty bounce, obviously. And I mean, they played well. Leonard was not the reason they lost that game. If anything, he was the reason for why they were in overtime. And so, everybody talked about the need to respond and how, it's one game, it's not a big deal. So here comes game two, and the Islanders play better, appreciably, objectively better, and they still lose 2-1, thanks to 48 seconds of just, bad bounces and bad luck. And it sucks being down 2-0, heading to Raleigh and giving the Hurricanes 2 days rest. This is not the optimal place for the Islanders to be. But at the same time, and I'm looking at our friend Carrie Haber's Twitter feed right here, Islanders had 50% of the attempts. They had 52% of scoring chances. They had 61, almost 62% high danger chances and almost 60% expected goals. You can't play a better game than that in the playoffs. You can't. And the Islanders still lost. So I think for me, that's the most frustrating thing, is that the things that they need to fix to win games can't necessarily just be fixed with a flick of a switch or a swap of a player. You know, they've played well. Yeah. They just haven't gotten any bounces. And I mean, how are you supposed to fix that? I don't know.
Yeah. It's hard, right? Because I really try to preach, like, say if a call ruins a game or you lose a game because of a call or something, like, you try to stick to, like, the kind of stuff Barry Trotz and other great coaches say. It's like you just move on. You don't flush it from your memory or whatever. And that is the frustrating thing. It's like these, you know, one or two bounces go the Islanders' way, and this is, you know, 2-0 to them. And so you can't really, like, even dwell on it. That they, you know, it does. We should touch on it. Like, I thought the Anders Lee, you know, goal getting called back was just mind blowing, because
they've had three goals called back, right?
Yeah. And I think that makes what, five in the playoffs, which is just bananas. And I mean, just like think about how many Islanders playoff games there have been since the big lockout. And how many goals they've had called. And this is not a conspiracy theory. Yes, it is. But it's just like from the Brendan Witt one against the Sabres. Like, there have been just so many weird ones that I can't wrap my head around. The two things that really pissed me off from the refs those first two games was, so the first one was the Lee play, and that the fact that the penalty, I think, threw everybody off. Right. I'm not even sure if you can challenge it after a penalty's been called.
No, that was the problem, was they couldn't challenge it because there was a penalty attached to it.
Yeah, so why do that? Like, I just, like, you're already penalizing the team for not taking the goal off. Go look at it. And then today at the – so, yeah, that sucked. But then today, the thing that pissed me off wasn't the Taves thing. I mean, that is such a weird play. Mm-hmm. It was so athletic. The NHL, like, needs to figure something out with.
So basically, he kicked it. He kind of kicked the puck from behind the net, and it bounced off the goalie and in, which is still considered a kicking thing.
He did it all while skating past the puck too. So this is like a no look. He was like, all right, and the thing that's annoying is he wasn't trying. Maybe he was, but he wasn't. I thought he was just trying to kick it back in front to the slot because he wasn't going to be able to get his stick around to it. I think Matt Martin was kind of in the area, so he was trying to do that, but it just hit off McElhinney and in. That would have made it 2-0 and probably wouldn't have been the game. But and then once that goal didn't count, obviously, you knew what was coming really quickly. But then Eberle hits the crossbar. It happened very quickly. Fans celebrated for the fourth time in these two games. Fans, we've celebrated a non-goal, and it doesn't go in. It was the right call to not call it a goal, and then all of a sudden, like, there's a scramble in front of the net, as there is usually when a puck hits a crossbar, and the goal, McElhinney's on his, I think he was on his ass basically. There's like three people in the crease, Eberle or Barzal. One of them is about to get the puck, and all of a sudden the ref blows the whistle.
Yeah.
And so everybody at the Barclays Center is like, all right, that's probably him being like, okay, it went in then, because there's no reason for this guy to stop play if, you know, there's a clear goal scoring opportunity about to unfold. And he calls, blows the whistle. No reason, no explanation from, no replay, obviously, because, yeah, and yes, this happens at the Coliseum too, but they don't show any replay. They haven't shown replays for reviews. They didn't do it during the Penguin series either. The Barclays Center is even worse with replays. And it's like, it was just like, what's going on? Like, how did you blow that dead? And nobody really knew why. And those are like hockey gods right there. Yeah. That's like the hockey gods just not wanting you to do it. And there was a play like that in the first game too, where a quick whistle screwed the Islanders. So,
yeah. Former referee Kerry Frazier is on Twitter, and even he, after that scenario you were just talking about, was like, that was bad. Like, had they just called it, you know, they would have reviewed it upstairs, and the Islanders would have gotten time back, and, you know, would have set it up again, but to just blow it dead and then be like, oh, excuse me. Then they go on. It's like, no, wait a minute. That doesn't, that's not how it's supposed to work.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's like hockey gods, but like hockey gods sort of manipulating referees, which is like next level hockey gods. It's like X-Men hockey gods, you know, at that point. Yeah, it's, you know, it's again, like we said before, like there's nobody wants to hear about silver linings right now. We all know what the silver linings are. The Islanders have played totally fine. You've watched them with your eyes and you've seen, we've seen the numbers. Again, Carey's got a whole series of tweets here that are just like, you know, showing all the ways in which the Islanders played pretty well. I mean, even like, you know, Matt Barzal played 20 minutes. Anders Lee and Eberle were over 7:30. Like he was trying to get stuff going and it just wasn't happening. And their PDO at this point is like in the toilet and they've hit crossbars and they've had weird stuff happen to them. And they, it just hasn't been going right for them, even though they've been doing all the things that they can to score. And like, again, nobody wants to hear any of that stuff when you're down 2-0. Now, we're going to talk about, you know, games 3 and 4 in a second, but like, I don't know. I don't know how else to explain what's happened other than shit happens. And I'm sure Barry Trotz is telling his team that, and they don't want to hear it any more than we want to hear it, but there's no other way to really describe what it is. And, you know, this might get back to what we've said all year long, which is as good as the Islanders have been, they don't have these sort of like natural sharpshooter types that can just will a goal into happening. Maybe Eberle is that guy, but even he's not really that guy. So I don't know. I don't know what they do to fix it going forward that we haven't seen yet.
So. Yeah, there are a couple. I think the Nelson, Kunako, Bailey line, which I thought worked really well against the Penguins. Their metrics weren't good, but they were winning like little moments and coming away with goals. Like Kunako would free a puck by throwing his body. Nelson or Bailey would be there to find the other good player. There are two good players on that line. One of them would find the other one and score. And that line, it just isn't working against this team. And I think that is probably going to get sussed out. Obviously, Cal Clutterbuck was limping coming off the ice today. It didn't look good. Like 20, 30 seconds after basically both teams had left the ice, Clutterbuck was helped off the ice by Matt Martin. So I don't know if he'll be playing. I have a feeling like, you know, this is kind of like the part of the series where, you know, like when a coach pulls the goal or changes a goalie after, you know, a couple quick goals in the first period. And he says, you know, it's not this goalie's fault. We just needed a spark. I think something like that is coming from Trotz. He'll pull like an ace out of his, you know, he'll play. It's basically his only card. Hopefully he uses Michael Del Cole and not Rush Johnston.
Big Ross is getting in anytime soon.
But that Del Cole obviously hasn't been a prolific scorer.
Yeah, we might see some black ace action coming up.
Yeah, exactly. The Sound Tigers are out. Yeah. So, like, I mean, there definitely are now some, like, weird things that he can try to do because you got to go for it. It is, like you said, like, it's just, there have been, like, flaws in the Islanders game. Like, they haven't been significant at all. I think, today, Scott Mayfield and Devon Taves were awesome today. I thought Ryan Pulock and Anna Pellick were pretty good game one, and Pellick was, like, sensational killing that 5-on-3 today. But I think the defense as a whole has done its job, you know, basically just doing whatever they need to do. So there's nothing to worry about there. And it's just like it's the forwards that need to kind of figure out. Someone's just got to get hot. Game one, Val Filppula had a really good chance in the first like 10 minutes. Josh Bailey had that breakaway. So like one of these, you know, middle six guys has to go because Barzal's been playing fine. And hopefully like if Del Cole comes in or, you know, someone else, they kind of spark the scoring pizzazz. So first thing I thought about today on the train when I heard some people like just like complaining about how, you know, the series is over and no, the series isn't over. Like I did was I put myself in the Hurricanes shoes. And if this was the Islanders, I would still be freaking out. Like I was freaking out when the Islanders were up 3-0 against the Penguins.
Yeah, I know, right?
So like it's not over, but sure, the Hurricanes are much more likely to win the series now, you know, probably like 75-25, 70-30, whatever you want to put it. I haven't even seen the updated odds yet. But last year in the playoffs, the Washington Capitals had a very similar kind of thing. Like they lost the game in a game in overtime against the Blue Jackets and another game, both at home, and they came back and their coach happens to be Barry Trotz, and he did something after game two of that series where he switched goalies, even though Philip Grubauer wasn't playing poorly. And whether that changed, it didn't change really anything. Like the Capitals got a very good bounce in overtime in game three where Panarin hit the post and then they won the rest of the playoffs. But like, this is a guy who's done it before. And just the fact that he can be able to say that and say, like, I was just in this situation. We've just got to, as Arthur Staple said, like, this team is, if they play this game over and over again, if they did it, they've now replicated it twice, basically. They actually got better. If they keep doing this and building on it, like, they're going to come out with, they're going to get this, at least get the series back home. And at that point, like, all bets are off. So, yeah, that's frustrating.
Yeah. We'll talk about games three and four right after these messages, and we'll see what we can do to maybe turn the tide and see if they can get it back to New York. So just hold on and listen to these messages, and we'll be right back. Games three and four are in Raleigh, where the Hurricanes are 3-0 this postseason. Like we said, like you were saying before, I mean, Barry Trotz has been in this exact situation last year with the Capitals, and, you know, part of me too, like, is I can't help but think, maybe because I'm conditioned by it now for almost a year, I can't help but think of sort of like the big picture and how I keep going back to the fact that none of us thought the Islanders would be here. Here we are sweating out losing two games in the second round of the playoffs, a spot none of us thought the Islanders would really be at, you know, a year ago today. So, you know, part of me thinks that the big takeaway is that they are playing the game that they're supposed to play. They just haven't found the luck. So if they stick with it, they should get a win at some point here or there. I guess they could play Thomas Greiss, who is phenomenal when he plays the Hurricanes, particularly when he plays them in Raleigh. So that would be something, although, you know, you'd have to tell Robin Leonard that neither of these two games have been his fault. Not at all. I mean, I guess the goal today, the Warren Fogle goal, wasn't really great, but hey, you know what? I mean, you can't fault the guy for letting up a goal. So, you know, you can't shut out everybody. So I don't know. Like, I mean, what other changes? I mean, I guess they could sit a Kuhn-Hackl here and put in a Dal Colle. I know people are going to want to say Josh Hosang, but I don't know if he's going to get in. Maybe he gets called up, but we'll see.
It would be really funny.
That would be something. Let me tell you, that would really change the course of a lot of people would have a lot of conflicted feelings, because I'm sure they still want the Hurricanes to win. But then here comes Josh Hosang. But, you know, I can't help but think that, you know, this is where Barry Trotz there was an article in Newsday about Trotz the other day, and how, you know, the fact that the Islanders are in the playoffs this year doesn't necessarily mean that their 5-year plan for making them into a annual contender is over. Like, this just happens to be a lot, you know, they happen to be in the playoffs a lot faster than they thought they did. Doesn't mean the job is done, obviously. So I can't help but see this still as sort of like laying the groundwork for a successful franchise going forward. But then on the other hand, I kind of feel like that's, like you said, giving up on a playoff series that is far from over. I mean, if the Islanders win on Wednesday night, that changes kind of everything, you know? So
yep.
It's a very weird spot to be in, like a lot of spots we've been in this season, you know?
Yeah, I can't help but think about that 2013 series. Like, that series was there for the taking, and people thought that was a step in the right direction, and the Islanders consolidated that with a terrible season. Oof. And this right after that, and obviously Barry Trotz being here will hopefully mitigate the chances of that happening. So
yeah, I don't think they're bringing back an empty tank of Evgeny Nabokov next season, you know.
Yeah, but I think Cal Clutter, just from the way he was, you know, he was banged up going into the series, and it doesn't look like he's playing. Another reason the series is far from over is, like, now the Hurricanes are down Trevor Van Riemsdyk for the rest of the series.
Peter Mrazek, too.
Peter Mrazek is probably, like, and obviously Curtis Macklin, he turned into game one Peter Mrazek when he came in, and it was kind of shocking. But When they, another beautiful Barclays moment was, so when the McElhenney came in, obviously the backup goalie for the visiting team is behind the net. The Islanders shoot twice because that's where they come in. It's a funny, you know, thing. And nobody really saw, at least in my section, like the goalie swap. All of a sudden it was now playing for the Hurricanes is Curtis McElhenney. And the sound is just so bad, and it was bizarrely timed with the announcement because the announcer didn't wait until the game started, and it was just so weird. Everyone's like, wait, what? Like, what happened to Mrazek? And, like, nobody knew what was going on.
Yeah.
And then, McElhenney, he played really well. I thought he basically, people are like, we got to, there's definitely a funny strategy, right? There's the camp of people saying, like, fire everything you can at the backup goalie. And then there's probably the other people that are like, you know, you don't want to, like, get, you know, throw like a soft wrist shot from the point so this guy can get a good, you know, good touch and into the game. So I don't think the Islanders did either of those. They didn't really test him, you know, for a couple minutes at least. And then McElhenney made a couple easy saves and then maybe a couple of really nice saves. And then all of a sudden he was, you know, basically it locked in and played really well. And but what I was saying was, this team, and then Saku, Magnalainen, and not that he's a huge loss, but, like, you know, those are three game one and game two starters. They're already without Jordan Martinook and Svechnikov and Michael Ferland. Like, this is a banged up team as well. Like, they've played a lot more hockey than the Islanders have over the past couple of weeks, and obviously these next 2 days off are huge for the Hurricanes. But yeah. Which is, you know, why it was so important for the Islanders to kind of do some damage early, but that is now not point is no moot. But there are several avenues back into this series, and I think just like one stroke of genius from Trotz, and it could, like we were saying, it could be something as simple as Michael Dalcol coming in and playing for, coming in for Clutterbuck and then putting him on that second line with Nelson and Bailey. And then letting Kunako play the Clutterbuck role, like that. Who knows what it is? But there's something that's going to have to, you know, change and like spark this team. So, I mean, I trust the guy to do it. And as I was saying, my friend, I just, you know, it sucks because you don't want this season has been so great, and there's no shame in the Islanders losing in the second round of the playoffs in this season after what has happened. But like, I just don't want this journey to end.
Yeah, no, and you don't really want it to end like where, yeah, we outplayed them for five games and then lost. Like, it's not, you know, that's not the kind of thing. I mean, in a way, I think, you know, again, ultimately, I think people will look back on this season and be like, damn, that was a great season. You know, we haven't even talked about the fact that since the last time we spoke, Barry Trotz has been rightly named a finalist for the Jack Adams Trophy, and I mean, I got to think he's probably the front runner. He and John Cooper and Craig Berube are the finalists. You know, I mean, there's been so much amazing things to happen this season that, you know, losing a PDO battle in the second round of the playoffs is not really the way you want it to end. But you know, and again, we don't want to sound like this series is over. Again, there are avenues back in. The 2 days off, you know, the thing that I kept thinking about is, the fact that you and I talked before the season started that the Islanders, they really needed to win, especially game one, because the Hurricanes were coming off of that emotional game seven. They were going to be tired. They were going to be on the road again. And that was the game where the Islanders really, really needed to take advantage. I mean, they went into overtime tied at 0-0. So, I mean, they just, again, didn't get a great, the 30 seconds of bad hockey led to to being down 1-0, and there goes that plan. And then we thought, you know, okay, well, game two, they got to come out and play better and win, and they did play better, but again, 48 seconds is all it took to doom them again. So now they're going into on the road, and the Hurricanes have 2 days off. Everybody, I mean, they both have 2 days off, and I feel like that really worries me. You know, these 2 days really worry me more than the 10 days off the Islanders had, because now the Hurricanes can really, you know, they've already kind of gathered, you know, banked these two games, but now they're going to sleep in their own beds. They're going to feel a lot better about themselves. They're going to have a lot of media and a lot of friends and a lot of family there. now they're really going to be feeling their oats. And if anything, it, you know, the confidence of this team is really something to really behold, and good for them. I mean, they're on a great run. But that really has me worried. And if I'm really concerned about game three, it's not necessarily in how the Islanders play, because they've played well on the road. They've played well in these last two games. It's the fact that you've now opened that window. The Hurricanes have now opened that window a lot more and can, you know, gather themselves at home and be like, all right, let's finish this thing in the way I would think the Islanders would also have done if they were in that same situation. And so that's what really worries me. It's I don't expect the Islanders to come out and play a completely different game on Wednesday. I expect the Hurricanes to come out and play an even better game than they've played in the last two games. And I don't like the idea of that one bit.
Yeah, like you wonder if when you look at like the glass half empty, is the Islanders outplayed a team that's very good 5-on-5 two games in a row, surprisingly. Like, the Islanders aren't obviously that great a team at you know, driving play and stuff, and they've somehow managed to do it against the you know, Corsi gods of, right, and expected goal gods of the NHL. So you wonder, but and you know, this is sports, and some weird shit happens. Hope maybe, you know, it's the Islanders, you know, they're going to need them. They're going to need a break or two in game three and four. And I mean, it's funny that when the Islanders went up 2-0 against the Penguins, they went into game three and basically were like, you know, we're expecting basically them to throw the kitchen sink at us in like the first 10 minutes. But and the Penguins, they didn't really, they did that a little bit. There was there was like a push, but there really was never that gigantic, like, until like the literally the last like 5 minutes of the series, like that huge push by the Penguins. And you wonder if like this, the Islanders are going to stick to kind of this sort of, you know, well-structured game they're playing, or if they're going to try to, you know, like, let's go out and like just completely push play for the first 10 minutes, if that's part of their game plan, or if the Hurricanes do it. So like I still have no idea. This series is still has been so much of a chess match,
right,
that I cannot, like, we basically knew what the Penguins were going to try to do, basically on a game to game basis. Barry Trotz basically said it. Like he said after that series, after this, right before this series started, that like, he's like, I knew we were going to beat the Penguins. He did. Like he had that series planned out to a T. This one's been much more of a chess match. And I've really, like, I got no idea what to expect from game three and four, game three especially. And you just hope the Islanders, you know, if there is like a gigantic, home, you know, the crowds behind them, big push by the Hurricanes, who will be jumping because they have a 2-0 lead, and they'll be playing a little bit looser because of that. Like, you just hope the Islanders are, you know, built to kind of absorb and counter like they kind of did early in the season, in games against the Hurricanes, and you know, they did against the Penguins very well too. You know, like just absorb all that pressure and counter and get rushes. Yeah, I don't know. It's now the margin for error was already slim in the series for the Islanders. It's basically, there is no margin for error. The Hurricanes can have a margin for error. You hope that Robin Leonard, he's played really well, like, yeah, super, super well. And you just hope he stays the course. And if he does, like, the Islanders still have a significant edge and goal. But yeah, I mean, yeah, they just literally can't make mistakes. They can't have another 5-on-3 or anything.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't think we would get to this point where they played this well and yet still are losing, you know. And again, it's the kind of thing where it does suck,
because you don't want to panic, because like, if the Islanders had been outplayed both these games thoroughly, you're like, right, oh well, like, you know, like, we've had a good season, but yeah, this is now, you're like, there's hope, but you don't, is it false hope or is it real hope? And right, that's what we'll find out on Wednesday.
Yeah, no, had they been outplayed, you would be like, well, there's a reason these guys were like the hottest team in the league for the half the season and just beat the Washington Capitals. Like, it's just kind of, and well, I guess this is where the story ends. But, you know, when you've played as well as the Islanders have and you're still on the losing end of things, it is very, very, very frustrating. And, you know, especially when the world doesn't care. You know, like if they if they lose, then the people go, "Yeah, those guys weren't that good anyway." And it's like, well, not really. They were. They played pretty well.
Like, it is funny. It is funny. Like after the 4-game sweep of the Penguins, it was, oh well, like they PDO'd the Penguins. Robin Leonard's had a .960 save percentage and all of this. You're like, well, the Islanders actually played well behind those numbers. I mean, yes, that happened, but they also played well. And now they're playing well and losing and getting, you know, no breaks. And everyone's just like, well, look, you know, it looks like the Islanders are, you know, finally getting what's been coming to them. Like, oh, my God. It's just it's so and if you're right, like if it ends, let's say hypothetically the Hurricanes win in 4 or 5, like nobody will talk. They'll just be able to talk about how sweep – it'll just be sweeping accolades for the Hurricanes. And nothing like, yeah, you know, like it was closer than it looks like. Like kind of like that Penguin series, but it won't be that. It will just be like, yeah, the Islanders run had to end sometimes, and the Magic's up.
Andy Glockner, who was, I guess, an old ex-sports writer and Islanders fan, he said basically what you just said in a tweet. He said, in round one, the Islanders were the better team and had everything break right. In round two, so far, they've been the better team and had everything break wrong. Like, that's just how it's kind of worked. And, yeah, I thought about something. You've talked about it before that – playoff series against Buffalo, which was, you said, was the closest 5-game series anybody ever played. I had completely forgotten about that series. And I watched every one of those games, and I completely forgot how close it was and how tight it was. And, you know, because at the end of the day, when you lose, nobody really cares, you know. And so I would hate for that to happen to these guys, and I don't think it will. And, you know, again, there's this team more than any. And, again, I don't want to – I'm trying not, you know, the show is still called Islanders Anxiety, so I don't want to, you know, give too much of a silver lining out there because I'm sure people are listening to this kind of down, but maybe they want something positive to hear. I don't know. But, you know, I think that this team, more than any other Islanders team we've seen in years, has an identity. Every team in the universe says, oh, that's our identity, but nobody really ever believes it. Nobody has that actual identity. This team has an identity. They have played this way for an entire season, and they believe it, and they trust in each other. And that's where the accountability that Trotz is always talking about. They're accountable to each other. They want to play for each other. And not that old Islanders teams didn't, because they obviously did. They were all tight and all friends. But these guys have a game plan, and they have stuck with it now for the better part of this season. And I expect them to stick with it also on, you know, Wednesday in Raleigh in Game 3. And so if they were to lose, I don't know how they would feel about it. I don't know if they would feel comfortable and happy about it. I would hope that they would not be happy, but, you know, at least still be confident in that ability and just like, well, it wasn't, what are you going to do? It wasn't for us. But that is kind of a comforting thing to know that they've come this far with this game plan and they have this identity and you just want to see them win. I mean, at least for us, we just like this team, this addition of the team so much that we just want to see them win, and you don't want to see them go down in a blaze of futility as it is happening right now. Yeah. That would really suck. So I wish I had something more to say, but I really don't. I mean, we've been over it 100 times in a bunch of different ways. Like, they've played pretty well.
They've been resilient, and they've stuck to the script so well for now 88 games. And the only thing that will – like, the Islanders – The next game will be basically, you know, 53-47 towards the Hurricanes percentage wise. Like, it's going to be close no matter what. Like, this game, and if the Islanders can do what they've done, it's really like up to that. Like, if the Islanders can stick to what they've done and what's made them successful long, they will be okay. Like, they will, not saying they'll win the series, but they will be fine. They'll be in that game, and they might even get, like, they might win, and then they might win the next game. If they don't do that, it's over. So, like, that's like, that is like the thing that should be comforting is, like, there is, as we've said, like, there are avenues back into the series, but it's literally just doing exactly what they've been doing for 6 months now. And that's the crazy thing. Like, okay, like, you've lost 2 games. It feels like the world's crashing down around you, but just, like, keep doing it. it's like you don't say that to, you know, if a doctor's, you know, doing a surgery and he's doing everything right and things just don't go well. It's just like, imagine telling him, be like, no, just keep doing exactly what you're doing. And the next patient will be all right. Like, that's what it feels like. We're like, just don't change. It's so weird to, like, I want to grab like the Islanders as an organization and shake them. Just be like, don't change a thing. Like, just keep doing what you're doing. Even though you lost, just keep doing it and things will probably be okay. And that's never, what it's supposed to be like for as for Islander fans. Like usually it's it, there's there are changes that are slapping you in the face. Like do this, if you do this and this and this, like the team will get better if you fire the coach and do this. Like there are all these wholesale changes, and this one is just don't do a thing. Like just stay the course. Stay the course and we'll be okay.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it is definitely weird. But we shall see. Game three is Wednesday in Raleigh. We'll all be watching and we'll all be nervous. We'll all be sick to our stomachs and, and, you know, ready to puke the entire time. And you know what? We're just going to have to see what happens. And that's been the Trots way. You're just going to have to take it one game at a time and see what happens. Every day is a new game one, as we learned in the first series. So there's that. Okay, let's wrap this up so we can move on with our evenings and our days if you're listening to this in the morning, I'm assuming. So sneakyathletic.com. You can still get Islanders anxiety or Islanders merchandise there, the GOAT stuff, the Fort Never Lose stuff. You put anxiety in the discount code box and you could save 10%. That's sneakyathletic.com. Hey, buy it. You never know when they're going to be home. Maybe they will be back again. So we'll see. No NHL names of the week. NHLnames.com. NHL name of the week this week. We've talked about all the Hurricanes, but definitely visit NHLnames.com. It's set up by our friends John and Travis, and you should check it out. What else? You should read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. You should subscribe and rate Islanders Anxiety everywhere you can because we can use it and we really appreciate it. Tell everybody your Twitter handle again.
It's The Big Lebowski with two E's.
You should follow Mike at The Big Lebowski with two E's. You get some betting tips there. We'll see how the markets are affected by the Islanders and what Vegas is saying. Hey, maybe they give them a better chance than we do. You never know.
They did after the Islanders were – after they lost game one, I expected them to be, you know, plus 200, but they were only like plus 150. And I was like, wow, like this team like is getting a lot more respect than I thought they would from them. And then now it's, I mean, that's going to change obviously drastically now, but.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's, there's not a whole lot of teams, but again, it has been done. So, and it has been done by the guy who's now coaching our team. So there you go. Another tiny silver lining for you. But thanks for hanging out with us. We hope that, you know, we've helped guide you through the anxiety of now being down two games to none. Nobody wants to be here. Nobody likes it. But we're all in this together. We're all Islanders, as they used to say, and as Barry Trotz would say. So thanks for hanging out with us. We'll talk to you again, I don't know, sometime next week, I guess. We'll have to figure it out. Games three and four are Wednesday and Friday, right? So I don't know when we'll get a chance to get together, but we definitely will soon. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.